You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, Pat Lane, as always. This is episode 52. That makes it the Ted Johnson episode, the Sean Corrali episode, or perhaps even the John Farrell episode. Not when he was manager, but when he was pitching coach the first time he was here. 52 also means this is our one-year anniversary. It's the 1 year since we started the show. I do remember last year, as a matter of fact, was our first, we were doing a draft recap. And I remember kind of giving a little bit of crap to Chicago for making that trade up from 3-2 to draft Trubisky. Turns out it wasn't a bad deal because Trubisky looks like he's a pretty darn good player. What's interesting, though, is the team they traded with was San Francisco. They got a good player at number 3. They made a good trade. They also traded mid-year for Jimmy G for a second-round pick. So they're doing a lot of things right with a young coach and a young GM over there. So, you know, I think the story really there is San Francisco, not necessarily Chicago. So anyways, today we do have an NFL draft recap. I have Evan Lazar on. He's going to talk about the draft from the Patriots' perspective, and we'll also get into a little bit from other teams as well. After that, I have a three-minute drill, which you are not going to want to miss. I won't give you any more details, but I'll tell you, you don't want to miss it. And I also have This Week in Sports History, as always. So we have a great show for you today, and we're going to get you into that interview with Evan in just a second. But before we do, I just want to remind you that this podcast is sponsored by Beard Brand. Beard Brand is a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. Do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. And without further ado, let's get you into the interview with Evan Lazar. All right, we have Evan Lazar joining us. He works for Sports Illustrated, but you probably know him from the Herald and from his work at Pat's Pulpit. He does a ton of Patriot stuff. He reviews film. He's a great film guy. And so we got him on talking about the draft. Well, welcome to Evan.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be back on the show.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Thanks for coming on. So, yeah, so here we are. So obviously we're, you know, a few days past the draft, almost a week past the draft at this point. The dust has settled a little bit. And so let's really talk about what I want to get into first is just the first round picks. And we'll just go in order, I guess. So Isaiah Wynn was the first one at 23. Was this one a surprise to you?
Well, I think it was a surprise to everybody a little bit that they didn't focus heavily on the defense early in the draft. But at the same time, when the Wynn pick came across, you know, the screen, I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense for both their needs and also just for a player that they can plug and play any spot really on the defensive line or offensive line, excuse me, besides center, and really get a productive player off the bat. And I think that was really what they went with in the first round. Is although they didn't go any defense, I would say that they probably went with their best player available at the pick on their board. So that was good to see because was worried once the defensive players started to come off the board. You started to see Leighton Vander Esch at 19 to the Cowboys and Rashawn Evans, obviously, the pick before the Patriots. I was like, uh-oh, you know, are they going to reach here on a defensive player? And they didn't. They went with Wynn, who is a really, really safe tackle, a really high ceiling player at guard. So he's a guy that I really liked and, you know, on tape, it's kind of hard not to love him because he does a lot of things really, really well. He plays with really good pad level. He's very balanced. He's very good at his feel for the game. And just, you know, you kind of see how his internal clock is moving at the right pace. And he's never too fast or too slow. And he's never out of control with his body. And he plays with great leverage and pad level. So those are all things that you love to see from an offensive lineman, and obviously his hands are also extremely strong too. So I think that he's probably best suited to play guard at the next level, but I think that he can play tackle, especially early on in his career with the Patriots while they have guards like Joe Tooney and Shaq Mason in the fold. And maybe, you know, this is kind of where versatility is going to be key. I'm working on my 53-man roster projection here, a way-too-early version, and Isaiah Wynn's flexibility to play inside or outside kind of allows them to keep Tony Garcia or a Trent Brown, who they just traded for from San Francisco, and kind of see what they can get from those high upside tackles and pass protection, and then be able to keep a guy like Wynn who can play guard or tackle. So if there's an injury inside, he can easily kick inside and probably be almost a Pro Bowl caliber player as a guard. So I really like the pick. It's hard not to when you watch the guy because he's just so fundamentally sound for an offensive lineman.
Yeah, I'm with you on pretty much everything you said there. I mean, to me, you know, again, it's about, I mean, clearly they introduce him as a tackle, right? So obviously they're going to give him a shot at tackle. You know, most people that reviewed him said that, you know, makes more sense as a guard because he's only 6'2". I think they were talking about it on the radio today, and they said the shortest tackle in the league, or at least left tackle in the league, is like 6'4". So that's like a good inch and a half taller than Wynn is. And so, you know, I mean, not that it can't be done, but it just seems like his more natural position is guard. They're going to obviously try him at tackle. He's got long arms, so maybe that matters, you know, whether it does or not, I don't know. But, you know, I like the idea of drafting the best player available. And certainly at a position like that where, okay, they need a left tackle this offseason, but then Shaq Mason's going to get paid next year, and it's not by the Patriots. So you need a guard as well. And so you may say, well, I don't want to spend a first-round pick on a guard, and I understand that. But if this guy is, you know, the next Logan Mankins, where he's going to be, you know, one of the best guards in the league for the next 10 years, well, then maybe it's worth it. And who knows? You try him on a tackle, and maybe he works a tackle, and then you got a left tackle too. So, you know, I like the pick a lot. And that position flexibility for Belichick, like you said, I mean, he loves that stuff too. So that also made sense.
Right, yeah. It's really just a great scheme fit from top to bottom, too, with when the things that he's good at, especially in the running game, like climbing to the second level, making blocks move, or chipping and then climbing, or wham blocking, or stunting, stuff like that, he is very, very good at. And that's a very good fit with the Patriots, especially with their run schemes. And really in pass protection, for the most part, he's pretty good at getting out of his stance and sliding at left tackle. I mean, he only allowed 5 pressures the entire season last year playing in the SEC, which is obviously, you know, a big boy conference. So I think that he has a chance to play tackle in the league if they really need him there, but they have some great depth there, and he's really just going to make the offensive line as a whole better. Logan Mankins, he's a much different player than Logan Mankins, but it's a similar style of pick as Logan Mankins, where it's like, yeah, maybe it's not, you know, maybe he's best suited at guard. Mankins also played some tackle in college and then converted to guard when he got to the Pats, but you know what, it doesn't really matter because have a Pro Bowl guy or potentially an All-Pro guy like a Wynn or a Mankins, you know, it just makes the whole line better as a whole.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And obviously, I mean, it's the most important thing. And you know, you even look at the Super Bowl, I mean, that, you know, that part of it, that inside rush, obviously is what forced the fumble, and that's kind of what you worry about. At Brady at 41 years old, like, you know, is he going to be, you know, that's where I'm concerned about it. Coming off the edge, maybe not so much. He can step up. But if you got it in front of him, you know, coming up the gut, it's awfully tough for him to shake that pressure off. So I think, you know, even if it's a guard, I think it makes sense.
Sure, yeah. And you know, also just quickly, I'm not so sure I'm 100% sold on Joe Tooney yet as a starting left guard in this league. I like the things that Tooney can do. He's athletic, so he can do a lot of the things that they ask of their guards in the run game, which is pretty key. But in pass protection, he was much worse in pass protection than Shaq Mason, even though Mason ended up giving up that sack on the strip sack in the Super Bowl. But really, Joe Tooney was really the weak point, and a guy that really has trouble with power. And you can see when he gets bull rushed that it's quite a problem for him. I think that this is kind of a shot in the arm, you know, kind of like a let's go to Joe Tooney by Bill Belichick and Dante Scarnecchia, also, who's a guy, you know, that they loved Tooney when they drafted him. They were rarely happy to get him where they got him in that draft. So we'll see what happens with him. But I can definitely see Wynn kind of pushing both those guards. And Shaq Mason, you want to get paid? Well, you better play pretty well because we just drafted a guy in the first round that could take your spot.
Right. No, that's a good point. That's a good point too. So, all right. So they move on to 31, and at this point, I kind of thought at 31 they might trade out because Jackson was still on the board. There were definitely people interested in Jackson. Obviously, the Ravens ended up trading up to 32 to take him. But the Patriots kind of went surprised here with a running back. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I freaking love this pick. I wrote a draft article this week, and I gave this pick an A. I just think this could be an absolute home run for the Patriots. You know, you draft a guy, he's a home run hitter as a running back, and what he gives you that James White and Rex Burkhead and, you know, those guys don't give you is that dual threat. He can play all three downs, and he could come in right away as a rookie and start. And, you know, I love this pick.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've been gushing over Michelle for a while now. He's a really dynamic talent. He reminds me a lot of the Saints running back, Alvin Kamara, who they drafted last year. And I think that the league as a whole kind of learned from last year when they allowed guys like Kamara and Kareem Hunt and so on and so forth, Tariq Cohen, another one from the Bears. Those guys really fell in the draft because a lot of teams kind of were going the other way with how they value the running back position as a whole, and they didn't want to waste early picks on the running backs. Then Alvin Kamara comes in the league, Kareem Hunt comes in the league, these guys set it on fire, and the whole league is kind of like, okay, wait a second, you know, maybe we went a little bit too far the other way. So they came back with this pick towards, you know, evaluating the running back position. And what you said about the dual threat thing is really what's key to it for me. And I think that this is kind of one of those things where Patriots fans can tend to overrate the players that are on the team, especially guys like a James White, who's a Super Bowl hero here in New England, and everybody loves James White. But the thing is that, you know, Michelle is just on a different level talent-wise than a Rex Burkhead or a James White. And I love those players too, but it's just a different style of player and a more explosive player and really a guy that I think has the potential to be a Pro Bowler versus a guy that's just, you know, a part of a running back by committee like a Burkhead or a James White would be. They lost Deion Lewis to Tennessee. They allowed someone else to pay him. The Titans did. And they didn't really replace him in the offseason during free agency. I mean, really, the running back that they brought in was Jeremy Hill. And all of us, when that happened, were kind of like, that can't be your Deion Lewis replacement, no. Right? You know, they need to upgrade that position. So they really lost their factor back. They lost a guy that can stay on the field in all situations and is a huge factor in both the pass and the run game. They got it back with Michelle. And Michelle can also pass protect too, which is something that means that he'll be able to play from day one right away because the Patriots are not about to put a running back on the field that can't pass protect. James White is a great example of that. He basically redshirted his rookie year, and a huge reason for that was because he didn't know how to pass protect and pick up blitzes and stuff like that.
Right. No, it's true. And I think too, you know, when you talk about running back, and people say running back doesn't matter, and I think for a while, like you said, the NFL was just like, well, running backs don't matter. We can pick them up whenever. But I think there's a caveat to that. I think the old school running back, you know, the LeGarrette Blount or, you know, Jonas Gray was only around for like a day. But like, you know, a guy like that that can run the ball 30 times, you know, 25 times a game, but can't really catch the ball to the backfield, isn't really super explosive. Those guys are gone by the wayside. But the guys now that dominate the league are the guys like Hunt and Kamara and hopefully Michelle that, you know, they run the ball well. They have good vision when they're running the ball, but they also catch the ball well out of the backfield. And like you said, they're great pass blockers too. And that's a key to it as well. So they don't ever have to come out. So when you put that back on the field, you can say, okay, that back could be in the backfield. That back could be split out wide. And then if that back's in the backfield, maybe they're going to run, or maybe they're going to pass, or maybe they're going to run a jet sweep, or maybe they're going to, like, you don't have no idea what they're going to do. And so you're not limited at all by the guy that's in the backfield.
100%. And I think that's spot on as to why they made this pick. And really, I think they see Michelle. I think that in today's NFL especially, I mean, there's a few guys that are just ones like a Leonard Fournette or something like that that went early that were more bruisers. But really, in today's NFL, if you can catch the ball out of the backfield, then NFL teams, even if you're a running back, they're going to value pretty high. I mean, Saquon Barkley is basically 50-50 in terms of his value to the team as a receiver versus as a runner. And he went number two overall to the Giants, obviously. So I think that that's a big part of it, is that if you can be a guy like a Kamara, like a Michelle, like a Barkley, that they can flex out and use as basically a wide receiver or a slot receiver in different passing situations. And that's a whole other value added to the team. So I really like the pick. I think that the notion that the running back wasn't a big need is pretty nearsighted and doesn't really evaluate the talent that they have on the team properly. I thought it was a pretty big need. And when I did my big board for the Patriots right before the draft, I had five or six running backs in the first couple rounds that were targets for them, including Michelle. So, you know, I definitely thought that they were going to go running back at some point in this draft. They just went a little bit earlier than I think some of us were expecting.
Right. Right. All right. So I don't want to do every single pick, but I do, you know, 43 was the pick that we got from San Francisco for Jimmy G. And so that everyone was kind of looking to that pick as, you know, what are we going to get as a return for Jimmy G? So I just want to break down kind of what happened here. Traded 43 to the Lions for 51 and 117. So we moved back eight spots, picked up a 117. Then at 51, we traded with the Bears for 105 and a 2019 second rounder, which I thought was a killer trade because you got an early fourth round pick and then a second rounder next year. Then they get to 105 and they say, oh, we're not going to draft that either. So they trade with the Browns for 114 and 178. And then at 114, they trade that one to the Lions for a third round pick. So 114 was in the fourth round and they trade that one to the third round pick. And then they draft Christian Sam at 178. So if we're keeping track, oh, and by the way, they used 117 to trade up to draft Duke Dawson in the second round. I like that pick. And also I almost lost it yesterday or Monday, I guess, listening to Sports Talk Radio. And they're talking about how Coney Ealy was traded for a second round draft pick. And that drives me insane because the Patriots moved down eight spots and technically they gave up a third round pick, but they got back a third round pick. That was eight picks later. It was just, it's anyways, if they're going to say that Coney Ealy was traded for a second round pick, then I'm going to say that Duke Dawson is part of the Jimmy G trade and count him as part of the Jimmy G trade. So right now from Jimmy G, we have Duke Dawson, we have Christian Sam, and we have a 2019 second rounder and a 2019 third rounder. So obviously incomplete so far because they haven't done anything with those two second round picks or those two picks next year. But looks like it's starting to become a decent return.
Yeah, well, I think that the thing is that what nobody considered with the Jimmy G thing, basically because they wanted to fit their narrative, so they didn't want to consider it, is that that pick is still tradable again, just like they did. So I think now, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, well, they can get four or five, six players for one, essentially, in this trade. And if Duke Dawson ends up being a good slot corner, or Christian Sam ends up being a good pass coverage linebacker, or they ended up drafting a pass rusher in next year's draft in the second round, or another quarterback at some point, you know, all of a sudden you're going to see this formula like you just outlined, where they're just adding, you know, they have four guys that all equaled one Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, obviously, that's the kind of the price that you pay for a franchise quarterback in the NFL when you make a trade for a guy like that. And I know people are still going to be upset over the fact that they didn't hang on to Jimmy. But, I mean, at the point is that you knew that Belichick was going to maximize the asset somehow. He didn't exactly do it in the original trade. But I think now you see what his plan was to kind of get four or five players for one in the trade ultimately.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, it's interesting, you know, most trades ever for him in a draft. So I thought that was interesting to see. So, you know, eight trades and most of them were back. One of them obviously was for Trent Brown. One of them was up. And then, you know, the other six were back. So it just gives you an idea of kind of what he thought about this year's draft. But so now, as far as outside of the first round, what was your favorite pick outside of the first round for the Patriots?
Well, I've gone back and forth on this one because it's tough for me to pick. You know, there's a couple of guys that I like at the back end of the draft that are kind of you know, the same style of talent, you know, same talent level. But I'll give you two. I think Christian Pham's a good pick. I think that he's a guy that is a little bit improved from like a Marquise Flowers or someone like that that can come in here and bring some athleticism and cover. So I think that that's going to be something that they're going to like a lot about him, and fans are going to like a lot about him. Essentially, I see Christian Pham as a weak side linebacker, but at the same time, in today's NFL, like, you can really throw out the Mike Will Sam stuff, because every team is in nickel so often, they're really only using two linebackers. And at that point, when you only have two linebackers on the field, you might only have one in the middle of the defense. So it just gets kind of muddled up. So essentially, I see Christian Pham pushing Ronan Roberts for his role in the defense. A guy that can hang in the run game. He isn't a thumper quite like Roberts is. He's not going to hit guys hard or blitz hard or anything like that. He's more of a guy that when you keep clean, he can kind of clean up running plays, which is something that I really wanted them to look at for. It was a guy that could really, you know, run sideline to sideline and chase down running backs and make plays in, you know, that secondary level of the defense. So that's good to see. And I think that Sam is going to be a guy that can really handle covering running backs out of the backfield. He can carry tight ends downfield. I wouldn't exactly go and put him in a matchup against Travis Kelce right away or something like that. But I definitely think that if you drop him into a zone over the middle of the field and you have him carry a running back to a cover three or a cover two safety, then he'll be fine doing that. So there's some things that I really like about Sam's game. I wish he was a little bit more of a block shedder and he took on blocks a little bit more. He kind of likes to slip guys and run around them instead, which is, you know, a style that can be successful if you're good at it. So it's not too big of an issue, but it's not really something that the Patriots typically look for in their linebackers. Like, they drafted Juwan Bentley around earlier, who's just an old school thumper, a lot like a Dante Hightower, who's just going to come up and hit people. So there's a difference there between Sam and Bentley in terms of their style. But in overall, I think that he's the kind of guy that the Patriots needed, the kind of guy that the fans wanted. It happened a little bit later in the draft than everybody would have liked. But I think that he's a guy that can contribute. And I think that Patriots fans will be very happy if he eventually pushes Alondon Roberts off the roster.
Okay, I like it. I tell you what, my favorite pick you just actually mentioned was the other linebacker they drafted, which is Juwan Bentley. And I just, for me personally, it's a lot about his character. I mean, here's a guy who was a 3-year captain in college, which means as a sophomore, his team voted him as a captain as a sophomore, which I think is pretty legit. You know, pretty impressive as far as the way I look at it. He was also, if you look at Pro Football Focus, was the second highest rated linebacker in the entire NCAA last year. He was actually, according to Pro Football Focus, the highest rated player the Patriots drafted all weekend. I think he was like a 91.4 or something like that. And so, you know, now not that, you know, I mean, that's obviously that's the NCAA game and, you know, that it doesn't necessarily translate to the NFL. But, you know, to me, he's a hard hitting guy. And the biggest knock on him is his speed. But when I watch tape on the guy, you know, he looks faster than what he runs. Now, he's not a burner by any stretch of the imagination, but it seems like, you know, he had a pick six where he, you know, was being chased by a wide receiver and the wide receiver gained zero ground on him as he was doing it. He cut, you know, it was in coverage a few times. So I look at it and just say, all right, well, the only real question with this guy is his speed. If his speed is even a little bit better than what people think it is, you know, he could wind up being a pretty darn good player. And I mean, that was a lot of question about Hightower was his speed and whether he'd be able to make a serious impact because of his speed. And that hasn't really, obviously hasn't affected him very much in the NFL. So I like the pick a lot. He's definitely not, I mean, it's not like he's going to come in and start right away, but I liked the idea of him coming in. And again, just that leadership quality of being a captain for 3 years is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think that the Hightower comp is actually, I mean, Dante is obviously a better player and more highly touted player coming out of college, but I think it's pretty accurate in terms of their playing style, just trying to compare him to somebody. You know, they're both thumpers. They're both guys that blitz pretty hard. And those A-gap blitzes, you see Bentley blow up guys a lot, blow up running backs trying to pick them up. And if he gets to the quarterback, he punishes the quarterback. I think the thing in coverage, I wouldn't worry too much about his straight line speed because I don't think that he's going to be asked to run downfield that often in a straight line. But his change of direction was really where the issue was. His hip stiffness is definitely, you know, a problem, and he's not exactly twitchy. You know, Christian Sam is like a twitchy guy who can kind of change directions and shift and do stuff like that pretty easily, whereas Bendland is more of a bruiser. But at the same time, I really do like the fit. And the Pro Football Focus stuff is interesting because I think the Patriots are a team that's usually been pretty ahead of the curve with analytics. And it appears to me like they drafted a lot of guys in this draft that PFF was really high on coming into the draft. And they definitely factored in, I think, in this draft what the PFF guys, I know for a fact, they have met with Bill Belichick and are in that building, in a lot of buildings nowadays. I think all 32 teams actually get at least some sort of assistance from the PFF guys now. So I think that there is a little bit to that, that he graded out really well in their system, that his run defense was particularly good in their system, stuff like that. I think that there's a little bit to that there, and the Patriots are kind of trusting the analytics a lot on the Bentley pick. Both Christian Sam and Juwan Bentley apparently were very, very high on their boards, and they would have even taken them earlier if they had to, but it just, you know, the draft kind of just worked out in their favor that they could wait a little bit.
Right. Okay. I like it. And, you know, so it seems like to me, you know, we like the, you know, the fifth round pick, we like the sixth round pick. And then once you really get to the seventh round, I mean, you know, I was going to talk about surprising picks or picks you didn't necessarily love. Once you kind of get into that late sixth or seventh round, you're really just, you know, for anyone that doesn't really understand or doesn't really know what the deal is there, you're really just looking at a guy to kind of avoid having to deal with him in undrafted free agency. Like, he's a guy that you are probably going to sign as an undrafted free agent, and you don't want to deal with having to compete with other teams for him. And so you just take a shot at him in the seventh round. He might not make the roster. He probably won't make the roster, but he's just a guy where instead of having to worry about the, you know, like I say, the free agency, he's on your team already. So you don't really have to worry about it. I wouldn't necessarily look too hard at those guys. But yeah, that's kind of where, that's where that is. So.
Yeah, I'll give you one because I really love this guy's tape. And that's Keon Cross, the cornerback that they took in the seventh round, who just flat out flies. Like, this guy is probably the fastest guy I've seen on tape in this class. You know, Nyheim Hines from NC State, the running back that went to the Colts, who I also loved in the pre-draft process, is really fast too. But I think Crossen might beat him in a race, honestly. Like, this guy just flat out flies. He can recover really well in coverage, but he does make mistakes. And I think that instantly he's going to be a special teams contributor. I would compare him pretty favorably to like a Jonathan Jones, who's a guy that really has found a nice role with the Patriots as a slot corner at times, and then obviously on special teams is a huge contributor on special teams. Very similar size, very similar speed, size measurables. So I think Crossen's a guy that was undersized. He's short. He's only about 5'9", 5'10". So that's why he went in the seventh round. But to your point about, you know, not wanting to compete with them in undrafted free agency, I think that he would have been probably the highest paid UDFA if he did make it to the UDFA. So this way they got him in the seventh round. They're able to get their guy. And I actually think that he can come in here and contribute, especially, you know, on special teams, like I said. So go watch his tape because he just flat out burns. I mean, he's like the fastest guy that I've seen in a couple of years, maybe. It's pretty impressive, and he never quits on the play. You know, there's running plays where he's on the opposite side of the field, and the running back's running 40, 50 yards downfield, and you'll see Keon coming up behind him to, you know, track him down from behind and tackle him. It's pretty remarkable to watch his speed.
Yeah. No, and that's, you know what, I had seen a little bit of him, not a ton, but I had seen a little bit of him, and he is ridiculously fast. But again, I mean, I don't know if he can contribute right away, but you're right. I mean, special teams, even if he's not necessarily going to come in and play corner right away, you know, a guy that can come in and contribute on special teams is awfully important to Belichick. So I think you're right about the, about the Crossen pick there. One thing, they drafted obviously Danny Etlin. To me, I mean, that's just a flyer, but do you think I think the reason they passed on quarterback, to be honest with you, is that they looked at those at the quarterbacks that were there, and they looked at maybe, you know, I know they were supposedly interested in Baker and, you know, maybe like a Rosen or Darnold or them. And then beyond that, everyone else was basically a backup to them. And so it's like, why spend a second round pick on a backup quarterback when, you know, we could just draft a project in the seventh round that has an arm and see what happens?
Right, yeah. I mean, I really think that's what it more or less was. So a couple of days before the draft, there was starting to trickle out some news about, you know, who the Patriots are interested in the quarterback position. The Lamar Jackson stuff, I love Lamar. A lot of my colleagues at the Herald love Lamar, but it just was never going to happen. For some reason, whether it was his accuracy and on-field issues or what they got out of him in their meetings with him, I don't want to speculate, but it just wasn't a fit, and they weren't ever really going to be interested in him. Josh Rosen, same thing. All those trade-up discussions of what if they trade up and draft Josh Rosen if he starts to slide or whatever was never going to happen. There's people in the Patriots building who really did not like Josh Rosen. Some of the stuff that you've heard, some of the rumors about his personality and the way that he comes off as cocky and arrogant and stuff like that. The Patriots felt that way about Josh Rosen, and I don't think that they would have drafted him even if he was still there at 23. So yeah. Really the guy that they wanted was Baker. They knew they weren't going to get Baker. That was really the only quarterback in this draft that they were sold on as being a high-level starter in this league. And then really what ended up happening was that once you get past Lamar Jackson at 32, there is a real drop-off from those guys to the next guy, and that's why you saw – you know, Mason Rudolph was the first quarterback taken after Lamar all the way in the third round, you know, 50 picks or so after Lamar Jackson was selected. So that was really, you know, what happened was that the talent drop-off was massive after that Lamar Jackson pick by Baltimore at 32. So Mason Rudolph was really the only guy that I think was a backup to potential starter out of that group. And then maybe a Kyle Uletta, but I was never sold on his arm strength, and I don't think that the Patriots really were either. And then you have guys like a Luke Falk or a Logan Woodside or a Mike White, those types of guys that I think everybody that does this, you know, evaluation stuff on Twitter or, you know, on whatever website it may be, we're pretty confident that that group, that Falk, Woodside, Luletta, White group, were pretty much going to be all career backups to maybe – you know, bridge starters, but never guys that were going to be, you know, the next, you know, heir apparent or a guy that was going to be a 10-year starter at the position or something like that. So really what the Patriots saw, in my opinion, was just a real talent drop-off after Lamar Jackson, and they just kind of decided to take a flyer on a guy in Danny Etling who there's not, you know, much to love about his arm talent and the way that he throws the football. He doesn't have a great arm. He's not extremely accurate downfield or anything like that, but between the ears, he's a really a Patriot guy that can handle a lot of different things. At LSU, he played under center, he played in shotgun, he played in pistol. LSU is one of those offenses in college that's really about as close as it gets to an NFL offense in terms of how they prepare, the multiple formations that they use. They're a game plan offense too, which is something that I think the Patriots really prioritized with Etling, the fact that he was able to you know, learn a game plan in 3 or 4 days and then execute it on game day and study an opponent and use those things in a game. That's all Patriot type stuff right there. So a lot of college quarterbacks are kind of, you know, managed by their play calling, and they don't even make play calls, some of them, in the huddle. Like Luke Falk, for example, you know, a lot of people talked about Luke Falk as a good fit for the Patriots, but the point is that he played in an air raid offense where he didn't make any single play call and very rarely changed anything at the line of scrimmage either. So those are two things that when you look at it and you're like, okay, well, yes, he kind of, he says he is, you know, is his idol is Tom Brady, and he kind of looks like a Tom Brady when he plays and stuff like that. But when you really start to dissect what he did in college, you realize that there isn't much there in terms of a translation to the Patriots system.
Right, that mental aspect is so part is such a big part of it for the Patriots that, you know, even if you're taking a flyer on a guy in the seventh round, you're still not drafting a guy that, you know, doesn't have that background. So I think you're right. I mean, it makes sense with the Etling thing. Again, I think, you know, quarterback, maybe not as big of a need as some people thought, but, you know, nevertheless, I know, you know,
just, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's not the sexy pick. You know what I mean? Of course, they want right. That next guy, but, you know, I don't know if it right. necessarily I mean, benefits the team.
when Tom Brady goes and he tells Jim Gray, amongst the other, things that he made headlines in that interview, when he tells Jim Gray he's going to play for two more years, I think that there is kind of something to be said about the fact that if you draft a Lamar Jackson, let's say, what are you going to do with Lamar for the next 2 years? You're not going to push Brady out because that's just not going to happen. It's not going to be a popular decision. It's not going to be one that Robert Kraft is going to be on board with, as we know. So what do you do with this ultra-talented kid sitting behind Tom Brady and Lamar Jackson, and you have to kind of have this holding pattern with him? And, of course, there can be stuff that you can learn from holding the clipboard, and maybe Lamar would benefit from a year on the bench, but 2 years on the bench really starts to kind of stunt his growth a little bit. And there's really not much proof of guys that have sat for that long that have ended up becoming, good starters. Aaron Rodgers is always the one that everybody goes to. And you can go back further and pick out guys that didn't, pan out right away and then ended up making it, like a Steve Young or something like that. But really, in recent history, a lot of these guys at least are starting at some point in their first year. And if they're not starting at some point in their first year, they're definitely starting week one, their second year. So once you start to really push that down the road with a guy that's that talented, it's not like a Jimmy Garoppolo situation. I mean, I think people forget what Jimmy was, when the day that they drafted him, or even some of those preseason games a year or 2 years or 3 years into Jimmy's career, we were definitely all still questioning whether or not Jimmy Garoppolo was going to be a starting quarterback in this league. And then all of a sudden he kind of just, skyrocketed that offseason when Brady was suspended and he got a little bit more first-team reps in training camp. Then he obviously started a couple games to start the season, and it kind of all blossomed for there from him. But this is a lot different. If they drafted a guy like Lamar Jackson, he's a lot more pro-ready than a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo. So it just would have made for a really sticky situation for the next couple of years with Brady. So maybe next year is the year that they draft their quarterback and they allow him to sit for the right amount of time for a year behind Brady. They learn, hold the clipboard, do all that kind of stuff, and then hit the ground running when Brady retires, presumably in a couple of years.
Right. No, that makes sense. Makes sense. All right. So let's get away from the Patriots for a minute. I just want to talk about just some other things that you either were surprised about or that a team that you thought crushed the draft. To me, the biggest surprise to me was the Saints. I thought, I don't know, how good Marcus Davenport is. I mean, obviously he looks like a freak athlete, but I mean, you give up a first round pick next year and they have an aging quarterback too. So now you're saying we're going to give up a first round pick next year when we have an aging quarterback to draft a defensive end from the University of Texas, San Antonio. I was just like, it didn't make any sense to me why they were doing that. I mean, they traded the first round pick, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, here we go. They're going with a quarterback. Like, I don't know,
Right. I thought that that was Lamar. On Thursday night, I was certain that that was Lamar Jackson. I knew that the Saints had really told everybody, Sean Payton told all the media that he didn't like any of the quarterbacks in this draft. That's what he said. And then when they traded up, I was like, wait a second, maybe that was just a smokescreen and they actually love Lamar Jackson and now they're going to go up and get the guy. Davenport's a good one. I mean, he has some serious issues. There's going to have to be a coach that basically puts his hands on the guy's shoulders and says play lower on every single snap, because his pad level is just the biggest problem that I saw with him on tape. He stands straight up out of his rush every single time. He plays with zero leverage, zero bend, any of that type of stuff. So he's really a guy that's just looking to overpower guys with physicality and athleticism, which at his level, at a smaller school like UTSA, he was able to do it and dominate because the competition around him just wasn't up to par with his body type and with his just raw talent. But in the NFL, it's a totally different game. Now, that Saints defense is starting to really come up, from the ashes here, and they have guys like, Marcus Lattimore, obviously, and Cam Jordan, and some other guys. So maybe their hope is that this guy can be another one of those hits that they have in this draft process. But, man, yeah, that was a good one. I was really stunned by that. But just in terms of a later-round guy that I really like to pick, the Cowboys, I think, really made a really good pick with wide receiver Michael Gallup. a lot of people in the pre-draft process were talking about either DJ Moore from Maryland or Calvin Ridley from Bama as first round targets for the Cowboys there. And they went with Leighton Vander Esch, who's the guy that I love and think is going to be a stud as a pro. And then they waited a couple of rounds until the third round to grab Gallup, who's basically more or less DJ Moore 2.0. He's not really that much different than DJ Moore or like an Anthony Miller or any of those guys that are kind of Z receivers that are going to move off the line and stuff like that. So I really thought that was a shrewd pick because they were able to address some higher needs of theirs, higher priorities, and kind of get a guy in Gallup who is probably just as good or, you know, on the same, in the same ballpark as the guy that they would have ended up taking at that spot in like a Calvin Ridley or a DJ Moore. So I thought that was a really good pick because I really don't think that this wide receiver class was necessarily that good. So they went with the guy that, you know, is much better at his position in this draft as a whole in terms of just creating the talent in Leighton Vander Esch early on. And they were still able to get a pretty good receiver in Gallup and a guy that can really separate. So I thought that was a really good pick. The Jaguars absolutely, you know, hit the draft out of the park. Getting Tavon Bryan where they did, the rich get richer in that regard. Having Tavon Bryan, Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue all on the same defensive line is going to be a problem for every team that they play this year. So that was just a hell of a pick. And then I thought getting Ronnie Harrison in the third round was one of the absolute steals of the draft. Now, I don't know if there's off-field concerns with Ronnie or medical concerns that made him slide, but he definitely slid. So getting both those guys, I think that both those guys, as long as Ronnie Harrison and everything checks out with him, are going to be day one contributors for Jacksonville in spots where safety, if you had to really nitpick about their defense, their safety spot was probably their weakest point, and the Patriots really exploited that in the AFC Championship game. And then you get a guy like Tavon Bryan, who's just an absolute freak athlete that they can put at defensive tackle, and they can let some of their higher-priced defensive tackles walk, like a Marcel Darius or a Malik Jackson or something like that. So I really thought Jacksonville, for a team that was already pretty much loaded at every spot except quarterback, is just even more loaded now other than that quarterback. So if they end up playing the Patriots again in the playoffs, that's going to be another really, really close game, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a good call. I think two picks for me that I loved, fifth round, actually they were back-to-back picks, which is kind of funny, but the first one was Maurice Hurst and then Shaquem Griffin. And Shaquem Griffin, obviously, you know, everyone knows the story of him, you know, with one arm and ran a 4.38 in the 40 and not one arm, one hand and ran, you know, 4.38 in the 40 and, you know, did like 20 something reps on the bench press. I mean, the guy's a beast. And obviously the concern was, you know, he has one hand, but like it didn't seem to slow him down at UCF. He's playing with his brother in Seattle, which I think is really cool. And, you know, that was an interesting pick for me. And I thought, you know, I was interested to see where he was going to go. And I'm interested to see kind of what he can do in the NFL because I do think it's a great story. And then the other one for me, I'm sorry, I just Mo Hurst to me, grew up in Canton, which is where I'm from. And, you know, knows some friend, family friends and stuff. So it was exciting to see him come off the board. This guy has first round talent and there was questions about his heart and everything like that. So if he can be healthy and, you know, everything is okay with that, the Raiders got an absolute steal in the fifth round.
Yeah, 100%. I have a friend that's a big time Raiders fan, and he was just very disappointed in their first round pick in Colton Miller, and then they picked Brandon Parker and PJ Hall. They picked a bunch of guys after that, including Colton Miller, that are basically just raw athletes, and were projecting their production really because they didn't produce very much in the college game. So we're really guessing. Well, PJ Hall did, but he was at a small school, so it was kind of more of a discrepancy in you know, talent than anything else. So it was an interesting draft for the Raiders, but then they kind of pulled it together at the end with drafting Mo Hurst in the fifth round, which is an absolute steal. My guess is, and from what I've heard, is basically just that the longevity of his career is the big question mark at this point. It's not whether he's going to be able to play week one of this year coming up, it's whether he's going to be able to play week one 5 years from now. Because at some point, they're going to have to say to him, you know, Mo, you just if you keep playing football, you're going to die on the field. And that's the scary part of the whole thing. So at some point in time, he's going to have to hang it up, kind of like a Nick Fairley, who was in the same had the same condition, kind of had to hang it up too for those medical reasons. And yeah, Shaquem Griffin, I love the story. Obviously, it's super inspirational. I think that this guy deserves a lot more credit for how good of a football player he is. I think that sometimes these types of stories that are, you know, the feel-good story of the draft, it's great to tell. But at this point, we all know that Shaquem Griffin is missing a hand. It's not, you know, a surprise to any of us anymore, I think. And really, we should start talking about the fact that this guy can really play football, and he's exactly what, you know, today's NFL calls for a linebacker or a safety linebacker hybrid, whatever you want to call him. You know, he's a guy that can rush the passer. He can play off the ball. He can cover in the slot. He can, you know, just shut down guys covering them in the slot like a corner or a safety would. And then he can also really rush the passer. And he led the team in tackles on a team that was undefeated and ended up beating Auburn in the bowl game. So, you know, it's nothing to sniff at his production. I really think that if this guy had, you know, if he was working with two hands here, he could possibly have been a first-round pick.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because you're right. I mean, you know, the story is the story, and everyone's obviously, you know, talks about it and everything like, but it's no one's ever seen it done before. And so for them, right, you know, people are so amazed by it, but then you're right. He's a hell of a player. And so, you know, one hand, two hands, no hands, it doesn't matter. I mean, the guy can play football and it's exactly what you're looking for in an outside linebacker, just like you said. And so, you know, regardless of any of those other facts, he's a great player. And that's really what you're focused on, you know, when you're drafting, especially in the fifth round. I mean, though, you know, looks like, right, that certainly 100%. Could have been a steal.
Yeah. And he, and his speed that he ran that really fast 40 at the combine, it translates. Like he's definitely plays fast. And he plays angry, too. And one thing that I thought he was just amazing at was spying quarterbacks. I mean, you don't want to try to run away from Shaquem Griffin if you're a quarterback. I don't care if you're Lamar Jackson or Tom Brady. It's just not going to go well for you either way. So really, the thing with his hand, I mean, it really only hurt him much when he was rushing the passer on the edge, because he couldn't, you know, grab the quarterback with two hands and kind of hold him in the pocket. He only had that one hand to work with, but he's still really good at wrapping up and tackling in space. And he's able to use what he has of his arm, you know, on the arm that doesn't have the hand, as at least, you know, a guide, so to speak, to be able to wrap guys up and stuff like that with two arms. So it really didn't hurt him all that much, other than when he was trying to grab at quarterbacks in the pocket when he was rushing the passer. But I think in the league, I mean, I don't think it really matters. If you can beat a tackle, you can beat a tackle. And most of the time he was beating guys, and he was beating guys at a pretty good level of competition. So I thought that it was really, it took to day three, because I think it would be tough to take him earlier as an NFL GM when this is such a crapshoot, and taking a guy with a clear disability like that, it just would have been tough to do. But I think Seahawks really are going to get a steal. And now they have the Griffin brothers together, which is probably only going to bring out the best in those guys.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So I think that just about does it. That was so much fun. I look forward to the draft all year long, and it did not disappoint this year for sure. A lot of intrigue with the Patriots. Even Thursday, just having the two picks and just the thought of them possibly trading it. And then when they didn't, then you get to diagnose all the players that come through, and, you know, where'd they go and where could they have gone? And then obviously all the trades in day two and day three. So it certainly didn't disappoint. And the season's great, but the playoffs, I guess the playoffs will be number one for me, and then the draft, and then the regular season. I love the draft so much. So it was a great weekend.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. It's always one of my favorite weekends too. I'm obviously like a junkie with all this film stuff, so it's awesome when I have like 300 prospects that I can watch on film over a couple months. It's like, for somebody, a football nerd like me, it's like Christmas. So I love the draft. It's probably my favorite weekend of the year. football-wise, even more than the games, because I tend to get too stressed out by the games these days, especially when the Patriots are involved. So
Right.
it's always good because there's really no pressure. None of us really know how these guys are going to pan out. I mean, Christian Sam could be, an all-pro linebacker, and none of us would know the difference, So it's
Right.
really a crapshoot, and it's fun. It's just so much fun to see how Bill Belichick works in that draft room. And I know a lot of people second guess him. Anybody that second guesses him, that thinks that they could do a better job or thinks that he does a bad job at this, is just absolutely crazy. There's no way that anybody on the radio or me or you or anybody in the media could do a better job at drafting these guys than Bill Belichick. That's one thing that really grinds my gears. It's just like, it's not something that's possible. This guy is clearly, him and his personnel department is going to kick your butt when it comes to evaluating talent. That's for sure.
Well, right. And it's not, the other part of it is it's not just evaluating talent. I mean, obviously evaluating talent is important, but as we've seen for the last 18 years, it's not just about the talent you have on the team. It's about building a team and building a team in the way you want to build it and building it the right way. And he knows what he's looking for in a player. So it's not just about which guy is the most talented guy. It's about which guy fits my system the best and is going to help us the most. And, we may think we have an idea, but we don't know what the hell we're talking about. And so for him, he
This year
looks
was
at a
a great
guy and says,
example.
that's who he looks at, You're right.
Yeah, this year was a great example of that because I had a lot of guys on my board at corner that I liked a lot more than Duke Dawson, and I didn't really see it when I watched him in the pre-draft process. And I like guys like a Josh Jackson from Iowa or Mike Hughes from UCF or Isaiah Oliver, who went a couple picks later from Colorado. I thought those guys were much better on tape than Duke Dawson, but I didn't realize that the fit in the system and the fit in the Patriot way and all those things were going to favor Dawson pretty heavily, and they ended up loving Dawson. I mean, Caserio could not say enough good things about Dawson. They would have drafted him if he came out last year. So it's one of those things where you definitely learn from that, just because this guy looks great on tape, or just because this guy has the height, weight, speed measurables that the Patriots tend to look for, there's so much more to it behind the scenes that we are just never going to know.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, thank you for coming on. Before you leave, tell everyone where they can find you and interact with you.
Sure, yeah. Just follow me on Twitter is the easiest way, at EZLazar. LAZAR. Do film breakdowns, stats when they're prevalent during the season and stuff like that. Write a bunch of stuff for the Herald and Pat's Pulpit, podcasting. Come on your podcast, come on other people's podcasts. So check that out. That's where I'm at. Easy Lazar on Twitter is where you're gonna find everything in one place.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's great. Thank you for coming on so much, and I really appreciate it. And again, best of luck to you. I know this is kind of like Patriots. It's funny because you're actually a writer, like for your day job, and even though it's not Patriots or you work in media, right? I'm actually a teacher, but this is my hobby as well. So, even though we're in two different fields, obviously, but we're both, covering the Patriots just as a hobby for now, and hopefully you can turn that into a career for you. You never know. So that'd be pretty cool.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. That's the goal, and we'll see what happens. But there's a lot of great people that do it now, obviously. But my little corner that I try to kind of put myself into is definitely the film stuff and doing the threads with the GIFs and stuff like that on Twitter, and kind of really getting into teaching people who these guys are on the field, and let the big journalists handle the gossip and the narratives and all that stuff.
Yeah, which is great. And I had a guy, John Chapman, on last week who John does a lot of fantasy stuff, but he covers more. He's a West Coast guy, so he does like the Niners, but he does more like national. But he does a lot of the same stuff where he's doing film breakdown and posting, videos and GIFs so you can actually watch. To me, it's just especially as someone that, enjoys football and watches football and I'm a season ticket holder and have been for a long time. You get so much more out of the information if you can actually see it. It's one thing for someone to say, hey, this guy's really good. But when the tweet comes out, this guy's really good, watch this play, then you're like, oh, wow, okay, this guy is really good. And so
Yeah, it changed the
it
game.
adds
Twitter.
another level for sure.
Yeah, it's great. And I love doing it. You know, it's a huge hobby of mine, or whatever you want to call it. And you know, I'm gonna keep doing it. Yeah, I'm on the undrafted free agents now. Just pulling some stuff with this running back Ralph Webb that they signed from Vanderbilt that they paid a pretty good amount of money to. So it sounds like they like the guy, kind of similar salary wise to what they gave Harvey Lange last year. So maybe there's something there with him. He reminds me a lot of like a Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, not gonna run out of the gym. He's definitely not explosive, but he just gets what's blocked and he's extremely dependable. So always a guy that the Patriots will look for.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Well, we'll have to keep an eye out there for that for sure. So thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate it. And make sure you follow Evan on Twitter, man. He's a great, great follow. So
thanks for having me on and for letting me rant here a little bit.
Absolutely. Anytime, my friend. You're always welcome on.
Thank you. Thanks. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks. You too. Okay, so that was a lot of fun with Evan. I really appreciate him coming on. Again, make sure you're following him on Twitter. He's a great follow. Like I said, you know, just like John last week, he's providing you not only with his breakdowns of players, but also with some video to go along with it so that, you know, you're not just getting his opinion, you're getting his opinion plus some video to back that opinion up. So you can kind of do your own research as well as you're watching what he's watching. So it's interesting, and Evan's one of the best at it. So definitely make sure you follow him online, and we appreciate him coming on. I'm going to get right into the three-minute drill. I don't want to waste a ton of time. It was kind of a long interview, so we're going to do the three-minute drill. We're going to do this week in sports history, and we'll get you out of here. Okay, so we're going to start the three-minute drill, and here we go. All right, my three-minute drill today is on none other than Tom Brady. And I just, I am so pissed at Tom Brady right now. I am so mad at Brady. And this is the thing for me, okay? He gets on his freaking interview with Jim Gray, and he does an interview with Jim Gray every year. And so don't sit there and tell me Jim Gray is asking him questions that he doesn't know the answers to. He knows the questions going into this thing. He understands these are things you can ask him. Notice how we didn't ask him about Guerrero at all. That's interesting. It's funny that he didn't ask him about Guerrero. So if he was really asking questions that Brady didn't really want to answer, you think he'd be asking questions about Guerrero? No, he didn't ask any questions about Guerrero. Nothing. So that tells me Brady knew exactly what questions were coming. He okayed it before. So he thought it was okay to talk about how he thought Bill Belichick should have played Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl? Are you kidding me? Are you the coach now? You're the coach. Tom Brady's now the coach. Get the hell out of here with this crap, Tom. And look, he's the greatest quarterback of all time. He's the greatest NFL player in the history of the game. It's not even close. We get that. I understand that. Tom Brady, you know, can basically do no wrong as far as I'm concerned. But the problem is that this team runs so effectively because of the way Bill Belichick runs the ship. And Bill Belichick can run the ship the way he does because he treats the quarterback, who's the greatest player to ever play the game, the same way he treats the other 52 guys on the team. Okay? And obviously more, not on game days. Look, it's just, don't give me this crap about, wow, you know, the rules don't apply to him. The rules apply to him. The whole point, the whole reason it works is because the rules do apply to him. If all of a sudden the rules don't apply to him, we have a serious issue. And it gets to that point. He thinks he's bigger than the team? He thinks he's bigger than the coach? Come on. That's a serious, serious issue. And you know what? I wish they had drafted a quarterback in the first round. I wish they had traded up for a quarterback to draft him in the first round. Because you're goddamn right that Tom Brady would not be saying the things that he said on with Jim Gray if he had a quarterback behind him. I know he's got Brian Hoyer now. He's got Danny Etling. But I'm talking about if they had traded up to number 10 and drafted Josh Rosen. Or if they had traded up to number 2 and drafted Baker Mayfield. Or any of those things. Or if Jimmy G were still here. There's no chance that he says any of that crap. So now, Kraft chooses Brady because that's the right decision because he's the greatest of all time. And now he's going to go running his mouth? Like, shut up and play football. I get it. You've earned a little bit. You've earned a little bit. You don't want to come to OTAs? Fine. But then you're going to open your mouth? Come on, man. And notice the timing of it. It was after the draft. He just wanted to make sure. It was after the draft to make sure they didn't trade up and draft a quarterback. Were they ever going to trade up and draft a quarterback? They were not. They were not going to trade up and draft a quarterback. I think those things may have been put out there for Brady. Because it's like, hey, buddy, you know, don't get too comfortable here. I know we traded Jimmy G, but that doesn't mean that you're the only guy that can run this team. If Brady thinks he's bigger than the team, this is going to be a serious problem. And I'm telling you right now, the way Belichick runs his team is he treats the quarterback like everybody else. And if all of a sudden the quarterback is going to turn into RG3 and not let him treat him like everybody else, well, then that's going to be an issue. And so don't sit there and tell me it's no big deal because he's the greatest of all time. I get that. And that's not going to affect Brady's play on the field. But it will, or it could, affect the rest of the way the team buys into Belichick. And that's how they win. So it's extremely important for Brady that he gets back in the damn program. Shut your mouth and come back to work, please. All right, I had to get that one off my chest. A little upset about it, as you can probably tell. The Brady stuff, man, it's inexcusable. It's inexcusable. I get it. He's the greatest that ever played. I understand. I don't care. I don't care. I can't have my quarterback or anybody on my team talking like that about the franchise. I just can't do that. You can't have players thinking that they're better or equal to the coach. You can't have that because it doesn't work. Because then when the coach asks you to do something you don't want to do, do you push back or do you do it? And if you actually do it, do you put as much as you should into it? And if you don't put as much as you should into it, do you get as much out of it as you should? There's a reason that Belichick is doing these things. He has the experience. It's paid off. We've all seen the stuff that he's done, the crazy shit he's done, you know, doing kick returns with the up back. With, you know, Dan Conway that almost takes it for a touchdown. Like, they're prepared for these things. And if you're not going to buy in, that's an issue. And if the quarterback isn't buying in, now you got to worry about the rest of the team buying in. So the tight end already came back crawling. You know, I don't think the quarterback's coming back crawling anytime soon because he knows he's not getting traded. He's the guy. But he's got to get back in the gym, man. He's got to get back in the program and get back here because it could get nasty. So, anyways, all right, let's go into this week in sports history. We'll move off of Tom Brady a little bit. We'll go into this week in sports history. I'm going to go chronologically as always. I'm going to start with May 2nd, 1939. That was when Lou Gehrig's streak of 2,130 consecutive games comes to an end. Gehrig actually pulled himself out of the lineup for the game. He was hitting 143. He had like two RBIs on the season. And something just wasn't right. And he knew something wasn't right. He was diagnosed about a month later with ALS. And so obviously, you know, terrible disease. And, you know, at the beginning it was Lou Gehrig's disease. And now it's become ALS. And horrible, horrible disease. But he played all the way up to that point where it's like, oh my goodness. Like, he played that far into where he had ALS and he's still playing. So anyways, May 2nd, 1939 was the end of his streak. Obviously, Cal Ripken Jr. broke it in the 90s, but that stood for a long, long time. All right, and then May 3rd, 1991, Cam Neely was cheap-shotted by that snake Ulf Samuelson in the knee. Bees were up 2-0 when the hit happened. They ended up losing 4 straight and lost the series. He would only play 162 games the rest of his career. Retired in 1996, tried to come back in 98, but it didn't happen. You know, and obviously he's now the president of the Bruins. This guy, you know, he could have been an NHL Hall of Famer, maybe, if he had kept playing the way that he was playing. Obviously, you know, his career gets cut short from a cheap shot from a really, really dirty player. But, I mean, you could tell how badly he was hurt. For 5 years, he played 162 games. For 5 years after that. So, and he continued to play this series, by the way. He got hit again on the knee, I believe, in game 6, I think it was, and kind of re-injured it, hurt it again, and that was pretty much that. But yeah, they were winning that series. They were the best team in the conference that year, and they probably would have gone to the Stanley Cup had Cam not gotten hurt in game 2. And of course, they end up losing 4 straight and losing the series. But, you know, Cam wasn't the same player, obviously, after the hit. So, certainly could have changed the way things went down in 1991. And really, you know, for their kind of their future beyond that, if Cam is still the player he is and never hurts his knee, you never know. So anyways, just something to keep in mind. So that's it. That's all I got for this week in sports history. Again, want to thank Evan Lazar for coming on. I had a lot of fun breaking down the draft with him. You know, definitely give him a follow on Twitter. And, you know, follow all of his stuff. You know, he's writing for the Herald. He's writing for Pat's Pulpit. He's also on Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated is not really Patriot stuff, but you can follow him there as well. You know, definitely follow him on Twitter, though. Like I say, great, great follow on Twitter. So definitely do that. And just wanted to give a quick shout out to Marcus from the Boxers Podcast. Make sure you've watched, make sure you listen now. Don't watch now. Well, I mean, watch the movies and listen to the Boxers on Mondays. And also Honor the Triforce of Mac and Goo and the Hashtag Dork. They had a big week with Infinity War. My God, if you haven't seen that movie, do yourself a favor and go out and see that movie. If you haven't seen the Marvel movies, I don't know what the hell's wrong with you, but go back and see the Marvel movies to really kind of get a feel of that. I'll say, really, honestly, to be totally honest with you, you really need to see Iron Man, the Iron Mans, the Captain Americas, and the Avengers before that. And I would say the Thors would be good too. The second Thor is terrible, but you know, the Thors would be good to know that as well. So anyways, what a fantastic movie. So big week for the Triforce, but we appreciate Marcus giving us the intro song, absolute fire intro song, and we appreciate him. So, and also want to give a shout out to MDOT and Core for the outro song, and MDOT is at MDOT Boston, that's on Instagram and Twitter, and Core is on Twitter at Core of EMS, K-O-R-E of EMS. So thanks for the outro song. For me, personally, if you follow me on Twitter, it's at Weekend War Pod, no E's. So it's at WKNDWARPOD. You can also follow my personal account at WTP Lane. Okay, and for the show, rate, subscribe, review us, give us 5 stars, really appreciate it. You know, it really definitely helps the podcast, helps people see it. You know, the more reviews and the more ratings that I get, it helps. So any little bit helps. I really appreciate it. And, you know, interact with me on Twitter. I mean, I'm just trying to start a conversation. I'm just a fan like you guys. And, you know, I want to talk about things. I want to talk about the draft, or I want to talk about anything, really, anything you have going on. If you want to talk about, you know, the upcoming season, or, you know, what you think about a certain player, or why the Patriots didn't go quarterback, or, you know, what any of those things, you know, hit me up for sure. DMs are always open. You can DM me. You can, you know, just tweet at me, whatever you want to do. So, but I appreciate you guys listening again. And we'll see you next week into the second year of podcasting. So 1 year in the books, year two starts next week. Thanks for following along.
Listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors, you'll need to tune in.